I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and this is Building Bridges. Right now, we're going to be looking at the war on the workers. But I'm also dreaming about when all the minimum wage workers go on strike, perhaps sparked by the massive union drive of Starbucks workers across the country.
And joining us now is James Skrida, a Starbucks worker based in Buffalo, New York, which started the ball rolling with the first wave of Starbucks union organizing, winning victories in two of three stores, and is now spreading throughout the country.
And John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State University, whose recent article, Starbucks' multi-million dollar anti-union effort may have backfired, is with us to talk about employer opposition to unionization. And I hope the two of you speak to each other since you are of like mind. But Ken, I guess we should start with our Starbucks worker.
Yeah, and James, we mentioned two or three stores. There were two out of three victories. That was about 6 months ago in Buffalo. But there's a new wave of Starbucks workers rising in Buffalo also. And you're in one of the newer stores, and there are about two or three new stores that are organizing right now. So why don't you just start us off by telling us about the new story of Starbucks in Buffalo?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad to be here and get a chance to talk with you both and John as well. So I'm a worker at the Sheridan and Bailey store here in Buffalo, and we are one of three stores that won our union elections when the votes were finally counted last week on Wednesday. So that brings the total of unionized Starbucks stores here in Buffalo up to five, which is really really just incredible, really exciting. And I think that all of the Starbucks workers around the country who are organizing are taking inspiration from the kind of momentum that we're building. We're up to a total. I just looked at the count before the call started, and we're up to 139 stores nationwide.
Oh, my goodness.
At corporate
Bravo.
Yeah. So just flesh this out a bit. What are the issues for the Starbucks workers Buffalo and indeed across the country? Why union?
Yeah, I think first off, the workers at Starbucks, I have a great sense are of a mind that they really want to own the workplaces that they work in. You know, I think a lot of people foreground that, you know, people only organize unions because there are grievances or people aren't happy. But I think a lot of Starbucks workers are just kind of set up with looking at the landscape of what it is to live in a corporate-controlled America and not really have any say in the space that you spend, you know, 8 hours a day in. So I think that's one of the biggest reasons. Some of the frustrations are there, though. You know, as the company has dramatically changed the way that it operates since the pandemic, we've seen a dramatic spike in mobile orders that most stores really just can't keep up with. The demand is really, really overwhelming. And there's tons of pressure now on stores that have drive-thrus to keep very, very low drive-thru times. Both of these things to me, and I think to a lot of baristas, don't really feel like they embody the kind of third place culture that Starbucks is trying to create. And it really does put a strain on us building the kinds of community cafe spaces that Starbucks, I think, in so many places has come to be. You know, beyond those things, I mentioned the pandemic briefly. I think the pandemic has really changed how service workers, you know, Starbucks workers included, think about what it is to be in the workplace. I think people like coal miners, factory workers, construction, you know, industries that have typically been thought as spaces for labor organizing are industries that it makes sense that, you know, you experience danger in the space that you're working on a daily basis. So having some kind of larger labor protection is really important through organizing unions. The pandemic has made it such that service workers have started to feel the same kind of danger when they walk into their workplaces. And I think having that kind of experience changes the way in which people relate to being at work, and I think changes the way in which people feel they need to do something about actually being able to have a say in what it is like to be at their place of work, rather than being told that you must do this and you must do this and you must do this, and not really, have an actual voice that gets listened to. So,
John Logan, Professor and Director of Labor and Employment Studies at San Francisco State University. What comes to mind for you as you listen to James? And I thought that very salient piece of, gee whiz, he didn't first mention the wages, although I'm sure that's an issue. Didn't mention necessarily the health benefits, and though clearly those are issues. But what he was looking at is the issue of a voice in one's life, in one's place of work, which is what union brings, which is a kind of broader philosophic understanding of the strategic nature of we, the workers, as the ones who create the wealth. So I'm wondering what you think about or would like to ask or discuss with James as you listen to what he was saying.
Sure. I, as you said, I think James gave a really excellent summary of, some of the major issues that have really sparked this organizing campaign, which, as you started off by saying, James started by saying 139 stores. It's pretty amazing. That's since the first two victories in Buffalo last December. And now the union has won 6 out of 7 elections that have been held. Again, as James said last week, they won 3 out of 3 in Buffalo. And that was a surprise. The Starbucks actually thought it would win at least one of those elections, possibly even two. In Mesa, Arizona, the week before, which obviously is not exactly a union stronghold, the company lost by 25-3. Despite the fact that it had been bombarding workers with anti-union messages, text messages, forcing them to attend captive meetings for several weeks for the election. So, both the traditional tried and tested anti-union tactics and the message, the anti-union scare tactics in terms of the message, they don't seem to be having the intended effect here. And I think James explained very well why that is in terms of the message. So, I mean, as you know, one of the messages has always been this argument that unions are an external third party. But that's the workers are not buying it, or so far they appear not to be buying it in this case, because what I would say is, compared with a lot of union campaigns that we're familiar with, even very important ones like, Walmart 10 years ago or the Fight for 15 and the union campaign at McDonald's, the Starbucks workers, to a very large extent, are involved in, what you could describe as a process of self-organization. I mean, there's a union there, Workers United, which is affiliated with SEIU, and they have been providing legal assistance. I mean, everyone knows the process is really legalistic, and Starbucks has hired the country's largest, most sophisticated anti-union law firm, Lisler Mendelson, and it's tried to delay elections. It's tried to prevent elections taking place on a store-by-store basis. But so far, it's losing the legal argument, and it's losing the battle for the hearts and minds of its own workers, because for the most part, these workers believe that they themselves are Starbucks Workers United. They're not buying the argument the union's an external third party. And the organizing drive, I think, has spread to a very large extent as a result of workers talking to one another and contacting colleagues in neighboring stores. So, when the first stores in Buffalo become organized, some of those workers reach out to Starbucks workers in other Buffalo Starbucks stores. Same thing, even in, you know, places where we don't associate as being sub-union strongholds. In Tennessee, you know, the first store in Tennessee was, I believe, to file for an NLRB election was in Knoxville. And then, of course, we have had, you know, Memphis, and, you know, a number of pro-union workers have been fired in Memphis. But again, you know, what has happened is once one store has become organized, you know, because it's taken inspiration from the union victories at Buffalo or in Mesa and other places, you know, it seems that these workers are you know, organizing each other and contacting, you know, partners, as, you know, they're called at Starbucks, in neighboring stores. And as you said, I think it's partly a question of, you know, they feel they're not being treated with respect. They feel they're not being treated justly. And, you know, they think, as James, you know, explained very eloquently, they think that unions are the sort of institutional embodiment of their notion of just treatment at the workplace. You know, how are they going to get workplace justice? Well, they're going to get it by having an independent voice. And, you know, that means unionization. And that makes it much more difficult for Starbucks to you know, put the brakes on this as well, because there's no, I mean, the anti-union campaign, the traditional anti-union campaign, does not appear to be working so far, although they're certainly persisting with it and even intensifying it.
Well, let me pick up on that, since you've mentioned. James, I mean, this is not a casual job for you. You've worked there for a lot of years. There are always the threats to one's livelihood. Indeed, John mentioned, and we know of people who were fired, including managers and so on, in Memphis, that were sympathetic to the union. So what's driving the workers, and what do you hope to obtain and instruct others, all these minimum wage workers that are so abused in terms of wages and benefits, but dignity on the job? So what do you think about some of the things John was saying, and where you want to see this campaign go? What do workers deserve?
Yeah, I agree with everything that John shared, and I think it's really important to emphasize what John shared about how it is that the workers are organizing themselves, as opposed to, you know, having union organizers coming in and facilitating the whole movement. You know, after I get off of this call, I've got two calls tonight with some people in California. I know there are a couple of workers here at Starbucks in Buffalo that are talking with partners down in Florida, down in Virginia, in Texas and Colorado. So it really is a partner-to-partner organizing movement. You know, the Mesa store, for example, was heavily coached by Michelle Eisen, who's one of the leaders at the first Starbucks here in Buffalo that unionized back in December. You know, I think a lot of people fear for their livelihoods. I mean, Starbucks has turned this campaign not into whether you want a union or not, but whether you want to keep your job, whether you want to keep your benefits, whether you want to keep access to Arizona State University Online, for example, or healthcare. And when they turn unionization into a referendum on that, you know, it becomes a very terrifying thing to have to navigate. And this is the kind of psychological warfare that is at the core of not just Starbucks' anti-union campaign, but the kinds of anti-union campaigns that happen everywhere and discourage workers from even taking the opportunity to fight for themselves. I think what I want other workers around the country to take from this is that you can do this. You can organize your workplace. It takes a lot of camaraderie and relying on your coworkers and deep relationships with your coworkers. And it takes caring about the place that you work, right? If, for example, you know, somebody says, well, if you don't like the place, you know, why are you unionizing it? Why don't you just leave and find a different job? First of all, this is what service work is like all around the country. It's not glamorous in the terms of how you're compensated, which is what we want to change, but it is a meaningful livelihood that so many people enjoy and actually want to make careers out of. So if you like the place that you work, if you love your workplace, you fight for it. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. You know, I think beating a corporation like Starbucks in its anti-union campaign is something that people didn't think was going to be possible. And this one spark here in Buffalo, I think, has given so many people around the country who are of this mind that, you know, I am not happy with how things are and I care about the people that I work with. Let's do something about it. And, you know, here we are now. A long-term vision for what I would hope that something like this could be is your Starbucks cafe in your neighborhood could be an organizing resource for all other service workers in the area. You know, anybody in Buffalo now that wants to know how they can organize their workplace, they just have to talk to a Starbucks worker here in Buffalo. It's not that hard to figure out. You know,
oh, I love it. You're creating a union campus to yeah. mobilize, and you're giving more heft to my dream of when all the minimum wage workers go on strike. You're really inspiring me, James.
What can the public do to help, those listening to this show?
Oh, super. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that you could do right now is support the workers at the stores that are organizing. By no means are we anywhere near for calling any kind of boycott or like mass work stoppage. Right now, if you have a Starbucks cafe in your neighborhood that's organizing, go in. If you want to support them, ask who might be a community contact that you can talk with from their organizing committee, and they will be able to tell you how that you can help them. Unfortunately, there's not really a one-size-fits-all strategy with public support, just because every election at each store is unique and the circumstances for each election differ from place to place. For example, you know, one location might want a mass demonstration outside where they have, you know, tons of support. Another Starbucks location might
And James, we have about 30 seconds left.
Yeah, it's been great to get an opportunity to talk with you all. I hope that for all the workers that are listening to this, that you can look at what's happening all around you, talk to your coworkers, and figure out how to win control and win some kind of voice for yourself in your workplace. Because if you don't have it, you need to have it.
And in 20 seconds, John, you want to punctuate that?
Yeah, I agree with everything James has said. And I think it's a fantastic campaign, and it could light a fuse amongst non-union workers. It could take off just like the General Motors Flint sit-down strike once did, thus signaling an organizing wave across low-wage America. And, you know, we would owe a great debt of gratitude to the Starbucks workers were that to happen.
Great. Perfect way to leave it there. And thanks to James Scarita, our Starbucks worker, organizer, and John Logan, professor and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State University.
And now let's hear from a Starbucks workers organizing in Memphis, Tennessee.
Because they knew you guys were coming today, and because we were having our sit-in and we were speaking to media today, they have closed our store. Word got back to the store manager and district manager about that. So today our store was closed. They said it was because of a positive COVID case, but, and history has it, we've never closed the store immediately and all day for COVID cases. Usually the store manager and district manager try to find a way to keep that store open for the day, but today we were completely closed. It's completely anti-union. So glad you guys are here. I was gonna buy y'all a coffee. Obviously I can't.
They're desperate, you know, ever since the first store unionized, they did a lot of very cheap, cruel tactics.
Of corporate and our district manager and store manager have been trying to stop our pro-union protests. They've been trying to come in and intimidate us.
So right now we have an interim store manager, and now she's bringing in all of her managers and all of her employees to our store, and they're deliberately taking our hours.
I went from working 35 to 39 hours a week down to 26 hours. And then I got benefits taken away. We're supposed to get a markout. It's like a free drink, a free food item. Those were taken away from us. So we weren't even allowed to get markouts, like go to other stores and get markouts and stuff. And for some people, that's a whole meal that they rely on. There are some people who go to Starbucks to get that lunch item that they need because they can't afford specific things.
They've been pulling policies out of a hat that we never heard of to try to intimidate us. It's not really stopping anything, it's actually putting fuel to the fire.
I've heard that some people have to move back home to their parents' house. They've majority of our store has had to get second jobs because hours have been cutting back short. Also with pay, like COVID pay, some people haven't gotten paid for COVID pay when they're out for it.
I've had people make racist comments towards me, and that was swept under the rug.
Being scheduled out of our availability or being given a shift that's just 15 minutes short of being given a lunch.
A month ago, I was one of the only shifts because we had 15 partners out because they either tested positive or they had symptoms, and it was nonstop being like, no, you need to go. It doesn't matter if you've been exposed or not. Like, I was exposed to 10 of those people, and I still had to come in.
I've watched my partner struggle. I've watched everybody around me struggle to A, pay their bills after working all day, or B, be stressed out all day after working with skeleton crews, and it hurts me personally because I love those people.
Okay, my name is Amy Holden. I was a store manager for Starbucks for 9.5 years. My district manager was not doing fair hiring practices and promotion practices. She made me write up Nikki for things that I did not agree with, but she told me I had to do it or I would lose my job for not doing it. I did not have any proof of any of the things that Nikki did. I asked for the proof and I was not given the proof. And I was not going to sit back and hurt my partners and do things that I don't feel were the right things to do. So I decided to go ahead and put in my notice and leave the company so that I could stand up for what I believe in. I believe, honestly, with the upper management going down from Howard to Rossann and Kevin Johnson, our leaders, that they're all about profits. They see on paper, it's a number on paper. We want more money in our pocket.
You know, the real power comes from the dignity of the work, the dignity of the workers, you know, being able to push against something like that, you know. That's was kind of the same power that the first store had when they were unionizing. They were starting to realize, you know, this isn't just happening here, it's happening everywhere.
I thank y'all for the support. It's been amazing just to see the community come out. You guys have been amazing. Thank you so much.
It was Starbucks, the corporation, I guess Twitter account, saying something about MLK in a very, you know, I guess, marketing style, which was very, it left a bad taste in my mouth considering that we were here in Memphis where he, you know, died fighting for the sanitation workers' rights to unionize.
Being able to go stand and see that spot and know that he came here and gave his life for the rights of other people to be able to use their voice.
My grandfather, he marched in his marches and he did the sit-ins. So it's his very home to me. It's like, oh, I'm following my grandfather's footsteps by doing the exact same things and fighting for what he was fighting for in his days.
David Roback sings about when the minimum wage workers went on strike.
When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet, things were different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with Joe Hill at the mic. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike, there was no one flipping burgers. All the grills were cold. Onion rings were in their bags. Fries were growing mold. There were no baristas at Starbucks asking how many shots would you like. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. There was no one pumping gasoline, no one driving from town to town, no one at the register, all the highways were shut down. Cars were stuck in the garage, CEOs on bikes. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.